In the morning, Cole found Joe Digger already up, checking the forelegs of his horse. He was as sober as a deacon on Sunday and showed no effects from the previous evening's binge, except for being crabby.
Left me in a goddamn stable. Woke up, my back was sore, smelled like horse shit, and had straw in my mouth. Is that any way to treat a man?
You were drunk. You fell off your horse. I could have left you lying in the street, but my good nature wouldn't allow it.
Well, it still ain't no reason to leave a man in a stall all night. I woke up wondering if you rode on.
Well, I didn't. You want to spend the morning grousing or get some breakfast?
I could sure enough stand something to eat, long as you're buying. You are buying, ain't you?
I'll stand you a quick meal over at the cafe.
Cole flipped a silver dollar the Digger snatched out of the air.
We're leaving in 10 minutes. Meet me down at the constable's office. I need to pay a visit.
What for?
Just professional courtesy.
Bone Blue was playing solitaire when Cole walked in. Cole knew him from his days as a deputy.
Bone?
Cole took off his hat and knocked the dust from it against his leg.
Holy Jesus! I heard you was fertilizer in some widow's vegetable garden in Kansas.
Yeah, everybody I run into lately has me killed in a different place.
They shook hands.
Judge Parker send you to help out Jimmy Wildbird?
Bone looked like he'd put on weight since last Cole had seen him. His belly hung over his belt like a haunch of pork.
Yep. Parker asked me to come.
You'd be about the last man I'd expect. How many he send with you?
Just me. I hired a bounty man to assist.
Bone shook his head.
Judge Parker lay it out for you? The troubles we got over here?
Yep.
Bone shook his head again and slapped an ace on the table.
Well, I'm sure Jimmy's gonna dance a jig about all the help he's getting from Fort Smith. Damned if he won't have to.
Bone played the last of his hand.
Come on. I'll ride out with you to Jimmy's.
Suit yourself.
Joe Digger was just crossing the street from the cafe, grease glistening in his beard, when Cole walked out with Bone. Digger picked his teeth as he walked.
That's your posse man?
Yep.
You know, if I remember right, he threatened to kill Jimmy once over a prisoner.
That's so.
That judge might as well have sent Cherokee Bill as you two. Way Jimmy's gonna act once he gets a load of you.
Cherokee Bill was a wild hare that had been terrorizing the territory on and off for a time, and no friend of the law. They waited for Digger, then walked down and got their horses and rode north.
Jimmy lives up near Sugar Creek, about an hour from here to Good Lope.
When they rode into view of the cabin, Cole saw her standing on the porch, a broom in her hands, and his heart quickened. Then she looked up and their eyes met and Cole's heart quickened more. Jimmy stood in the yard, his hands resting on the butts of his revolvers and his gaze steadfast on them as they rode up. Cole wondered, in that brief instant, if Anna had ever told Jimmy about them. Then they drew rein, and Jimmy's gaze shifted from Cole to Joe Digger, then to Bone.
Why are you bringing these men here?
Anna hadn't moved.
They're to help. The old boy sent you from Fort Smith.
I asked for deputies.
You want to say your mind, go on and say it. But say it to me directly.
His dark eyes flashed with anger.
Get off my land.
Well, that suits me to hell and gone. I'll just round up that white sumbitch, Caddo Pierce, and be on my way.
Hold up.
Bone rode his horse a step closer to Jimmy and leaned down.
Don't be a fool. Nobody said you all had to go kissing and sleeping in the same bed. I thought you wanted them killers caught.
The only thing will get caught is me getting a bullet caught in my back.
Jimmy's gaze was now fully on Joe Digger.
Nobody will shoot you in the back.
Come on in the house, let's talk, Jimmy. Just you and me.
The lawman's jaw unknotted and his eyes assented. Bone Blue dismounted, then the two men walked inside the house. Cole and Digger dismounted.
You might have told me you and Jimmy Wildbird had a history.
Wasn't much of one. He had a prisoner I wanted for the reward, wouldn't give him up, and we about went to gunplay over it. Water under the damn bridge, far as I'm concerned.
You mind watering our stock?
Ah!
Digger took the horses to the water tank. Cole looked at Anna. She hadn't moved. The only thing that had changed about her, if anything, was that she was even more breathtaking. Cole could feel his blood ticking in his wrists.
Are you men hungry?
If you have coffee, it would be appreciated.
She nodded, went inside the house, and came back out again with 2 tin cups, and handed one to Cole.
Anna.
I thought at first it wasn't you, that it couldn't be you.
She glanced over her shoulder toward the house.
John Henry, I thought...
That I was dead. Killed in a dozen places?
Yes.
There's a lot I need to tell you.
She closed her eyes, as if suffering some sudden pain she couldn't speak of.
No. Jimmy doesn't know about us. I never told him.
Cole looked at the house instinctively, then over to where Digger was watering the horses.
We need to talk.
Not now.
I have to talk to you, Anna.
It was all Cole could do to keep from taking her in his arms. She averted her eyes, then Digger came over. She handed his coffee to him.
Thanks for the coffee.
His gaze traveled over her, and she turned and went back inside the house.
Good coffee.
He drifted back over to where the horses were and took a bottle of whiskey from his pack, found himself a tree stump to sit on, and commenced to lace his coffee and take it that way. Soon Jimmy and Bone came out of the house and walked to where Cole stood, loosening the cinch on the general.
I'd like to leave first thing in the morning. I've got to ride to town and get supplied.
That'll be fine.
Jimmy looked to where Joe Digger sat, drinking his whiskey coffee.
We had a row one time, over a prisoner.
Well, so I've just learned. Don't concern yourself. He's only after one thing.
What's that?
Reward money on the white man.
That man will be my prisoner when we catch them.
No, you can have the others. But the white man will be Digger's to take back to New Mexico for reward money.
Jimmy's eyes narrowed.
That's a deal. Take it or leave it.
What about you?
What about me?
You want something too?
No, I don't want anything. I'm just doing an old friend a favor.
Cole could see that Jimmy knew it was a lie, but he didn't challenge it.
Bone vouches for you. That's good enough for me.
Cole looked at Bone, who shifted his weight and looked away.
Then we'll leave first light.
Later, Cole watched as Bone and the policeman rode off toward Tahlequah. It hadn't escaped Cole's attention that Jimmy did not kiss Anna goodbye. He busied himself with unpacking his animals and turning them out into the greasewood corral. Digger found a slab of shade on the back side of the house and lay down in it, his bottle propped in the crook of his arm, and then tugged his hat down over his eyes. Cole went into the house and found Anna sitting at the kitchen table, a cup of coffee in front of her. The light was dim, the cabin cool, and she looked up at Cole when he entered.
Why?
Why what?
Why did you leave without telling me?
I'll tell you now.
She shook her head.
Now's too late.
No, let me tell you.
She looked away, and Cole walked over behind where she sat and placed his hands on her shoulders.
I'll tell you now.
She didn't turn around or look at him.
Anna, nothing's changed for me. All that time that's come and gone, nothing ever changed. Thought maybe it would, but seeing you, I know that it hasn't.
She stood up and turned toward him, and he could see the small lights trapped in the obsidian eyes, like pinpoints of silver.
My heart called to you in the silence. For endless days, my heart called to you. And I watched for you on the road, thinking you would hear and come back to me. But you never did. And after a long time, my heart fell silent.
Don't.
His hands found her hair, and it felt like threads of silk. And she shook her head as if to tell him no.
I can't help it. I feel the same.
You have to. I'm married.
That doesn't change my heart.
John Henry.
That's when he kissed her. He had no gun, no horse, and no money to buy either. But on that morning, when he decided to burn the cabin, he swore a blood oath against the men who killed the woman. They would have laughed at him. An old man who didn't even have a horse to ride and no gun to shoot with. They would have laughed. But he wasn't so old that he had forgotten the way he used to be before he met the woman and had fallen in love with her. It was because of her he changed, had given up the old ways, and left Mexico and Texas behind him. Now he had no reason to stay the way he'd promised her. His heart was full of darkness that was darker than spilled blood. He walked for 2 days, and then a wagon came by on the third.
Where are you going, old man?
The driver was a black man, elderly, a head full of white hair like Texas cotton. He wore no hat and had some hair growing on his chin as well. And when the man spoke, one gold tooth caught the sunlight. Pablo pointed straight ahead.
I am going that way.
The black man looked off down the road.
What's that way?
I don't know.
Well, you come on up here and ride with me for a while if you want. I'm going that way too.
The driver snapped the reins over the rumps of his mules.
Where you coming from? You don't mind my asking.
Back there.
The black man swiveled his head around, looked, saw nothing. Didn't remember anything back the way the old man was indicating, except a trace running off the main road he'd seen a day or two ago.
Back there? Man, I ain't seen nothing since I come up across the border. This is mighty lonesome country.
Pablo said nothing. His head drooped, his chin touching the top of his shirt. It took a while before the black man realized that the old Mexican was asleep, sitting upright. Late that afternoon, the wagon came to a halt, and Pablo came instantly awake.
Be stopping for the evening, mister.
The driver climbed down off the wagon seat and began unhitching his team.
Good grass here, and a little water.
A small stream cut through the tall grass. There were blackjack trees of gnarly wood you couldn't sink an axe into, and the soil was red dust. Pablo climbed down from the wagon and began lending a hand with the mules.
Name's George. George Pepper. I'm a trader.
Pablo led the offhand mule over to the water to drink. George followed along with the other mule.
What do you trade?
Trade anything. Got me a whole wagon full of trading things. Watches, shoes, traps, fry pans, egg beaters, ladies' corsets, bitters, cigars. You name it, I trade for it.
Pablo looked around at the wagon.
What I don't trade, I sell. Maybe I could sell you something.
Pablo looked at him.
No, I have no money.
Well, maybe we could trade for something then.
You got any pistols?
Got one or two, I reckon. I'd have to dig around in my wagon to find them.
Pablo nodded.
Well, first, we'll have us a little supper. Don't like conducting business on an empty stomach. Martha says it's bad luck.
Who's Martha?
Oh, a nice woman I knew once in Iowa. Don't suppose you ever been to Iowa?
No. This is as far as I got.
George fried salted ham in an iron skillet. Its sweet, spicy smell drifted out of the pan and mixed with the pungent wood smoke and that of coffee brewing in a tin pot. Pablo thought he might faint from the hunger the smell stirred in his belly. George sliced some bread and laid it in the pan grease to fry. Afterward, he made sandwiches out of the affair. The first few bites were difficult for Pablo. His stomach clenched at the first food it had known in several days. But he slowly chewed it and swallowed it in tiny bites until he grew accustomed to eating again. George sat across the fire from him and devoured one sandwich, then another, the meat grease dripping down his fingers. Pablo finished his first sandwich and sipped some of the coffee.
Have another. Look like you ain't eating a week.
Pablo gratefully accepted the offer.
My name is Pablo Juarez.
Well, nice to make your acquaintance, Mr. Juarez.
George offered him a greasy handshake.
Learned to cook when I was a cowboy down around San Antonio. Hung out with some vaqueros. They taught me to rope good and cook and introduced me to their senoritas. Ain't no better ropers than a vaquero and no better looking gals than Mexican gals.
Pablo thought of Mexican girls and the woman, and how none of the Mexican girls he had known compared to the woman. But he shut the thoughts out of his mind. He told himself he'd have to remember her the way she was before the renegades came, if he was to remember her at all without the gnawing feeling.
Seeing how you were sleeping, sitting up there in the wagon? Knowed right off you must have been a vaquero at one time or the other. A vaquero learns how to sleep sitting up in his saddle riding Nighthawk.
Yes, I know.
George grinned.
Yeah, men like us ain't hardly none left this side of the Canadian. Things changed a lot. All the great trails, nothing but places in a man's mind now. White man strung the whole countryside with barbed wire. Barbed wire and railroads. They about have ruined this country.
Pablo remembered the days of his youth, the days of horses and of lariats floating through the dusty air, the sharp horns of wild cattle. The way a river smelled before you got to it.
I always cussed them mossy horns and the dust I had to swallow up and down them trails. Chisholm, Goodnight Lovin', the old Western. Rode up them all. Cussed them all, too. Oh, those long days and poor food and wild rivers. I don't cuss it no more, though. Truth is, I miss it.
There is a lot to miss about the old days.
George smiled.
Let's get to trading.
It was amazing to Pablo how many items George Pepper had in the back of his wagon. Everything imaginable. George dug around through boxes of tools and kitchen utensils and pie plates and finally found the pistols and handed them to Pablo.
Well, that's them.
Pablo examined them. One was a dragoon colt, the other a walker, each weighing nearly 4 pounds. The dragoon had a pitted barrel and split wooden grips, and he could see the firing pin was sheared off. The walker seemed to be in good working order. Pablo thumbed back the hammer and pulled the trigger.
He could maybe use some oiling, but it shoots.
Pablo turned it over and over in his hands, tested the weight and heft of it. Everything brought a different memory.
It's been converted over from black powder. It shoots regular cartridges. Belonged to a Texas Ranger.
Pablo handed it back to him.
Don't suit you?
As I said, I have no money.
Well, you got anything you could trade?
There was only the silver cross, the one he wore around his neck, the one Maria had given him those many years ago. He removed it.
This is all I have.
George took it and examined it.
Pure silver?
Yes.
George hefted it in his hand and turned it over. It wasn't much of a cross, no longer than his little finger. Still, what did he need with those old pistols?
Deal. You take your pick of either of them pistols.
Pablo thought about it for a moment. The cross was the last connection with the woman, except for his memory of her. He could not get revenge with a small cross of silver.
Bueno.
George saw how the pistol leaned so heavily out over Pablo's belt as he stuck the gun in at his waist.
Oh, no, that won't do. Let me take another look in the wagon.
He dug around some more and came out with an old holster and cartridge belt. The leather was cracked and brown and stiff.
Here.
Pablo took it, buckled it around his waist, and stuck the Colt in the holster. 3 inches of the barrel poked through the end.
Now, you are a pistolero, Mr. Juarez.
Oh, no, not yet. Not until I get some bullets to shoot.
George flashed a wide grin.
I trade you some bullets for that fine-looking pistol and belt, except I ain't got no bullets to trade you with.
First the gun, then the bullets, then a fine horse to ride. Then I will be a pistolero.
Yes, sir, I believe you will. Night's getting chill. You a drinking man, Mr. Juarez?
The boy rode last in line behind the others. The memory of the old man was branded into his heart. He could still see the woman's dead eyes behind his own eyelids as he closed them against the setting sun, burning red beyond the tan hills. She had looked frightened, true enough, but had not cried out as the others set upon her. She'd come out of the cabin and saw Billy strike the old man with his pistol there in the shadow of the lean-to.
No!
Take her inside.
She'd tried to go to him, but Caddo had grabbed her, and the others had turned and looked at her in the same way they had looked at the Osage lawman's woman. Then he saw the death in her eyes. He'd felt his spirit break and had heard the voice of his grandfather speaking to him as a crow, its wings glossy under the sun. Then his grandfather had flown across the sun just before it burst into brilliant red light. The men had taken the woman back inside the house. He had run to the corral in time to see the crow grandfather disappear beyond the hills, still crying, it had seemed, for the woman who would not. Then the sky had grown black as a storm. When he'd gone back into the house, the woman was dead, and the others were sitting around the table eating the meal she'd fixed them as though nothing at all had happened.
Why didn't you take part in the game we played with her? You're not feeling sorry for her, are you, Red Snake?
Caddo had been drunk, and the others were getting that way on the old man's liquor, which they'd found. And the woman had lain still there on the floor at their feet, a thing discarded.
Yeah, we should kill the old man, too.
No, we should just leave him to die. Why waste the bullets?
The others went along with it. He had thought maybe he should slip away during the night once they were asleep and slit the old man's throat and do him a favor so that he would not have to die so slowly or see his wife's dead eyes. But when the others had finally slept, the only thing he could do was go to the old man to see if he had already died. And when he saw that he hadn't, he had lifted a canteen to the old man's lips and then crept away. After they had ridden away, he had pretended to be angry.
I'm going back to cut that old man's throat. Then you'll think I'm one of you.
Go ahead, boy. Make sure you bring back the old man's heart as proof.
He had hoped that when he arrived, the old man would be dead. But he wasn't. And so he'd gone and killed one of the pigs the old man kept and cut out its heart. Then he had undone the wire they'd tied up the old man with before riding away with the heart in his pocket. Billy looked at the heart.
You know, boy, to be a brave warrior, you gotta eat that heart.
so he had eaten the heart, to prove he was not lying to them, and that he was as brave as any of them. But mostly, he had eaten the heart to choke down his secret. That night, he had had a vision that the crow had turned white, and the sun had become a bloody eye that the white crow held in its beak, plucked from the face of the great maker. He had not known what the vision meant, but he had crept away from the camp and gagged the chunks of the heart from his guts, falling to his knees, tasting naught but his own bile. Then the crow had come and perched on a branch of a cottonwood near the boy.
A man will come for you, and he will be death. And when he releases your spirit, you will forever wander in the great emptiness of a dry land, without water or food or rest, and this will be your punishment.
Then the crow had flown down from its perch and had taken one of the chunks of expunged heart in its beak and had flown away in a great flurry of wings. To the boy, it had been as though the crow had taken away his own heart and had left his sin in the remaining bloody fragments. And for a long time, it was hard for him to breathe. And when the vision, or the reality, had ended, he had felt death creeping into his blood, a vague black thing, blacker than the crow's feathered body. On the other side of the wall, they could hear the guttural rasps of Joe Digger as he slept, narcotized from the whiskey and the warm air. Anna's hands sought Cole's face there in the dim, cool light of the cabin.
How long would Jimmy be gone?
Usually when he goes to Tahlequah, he is gone the day. But this time he may not be.
It's easily an hour riding each way.
Cole could feel the heat through her clothes, and old aches stirred in him in ways he couldn't describe. She led him to the bed behind a curtain.
I should tell you to leave.
Is that what you really want?
Her dusky skin felt fevered to Cole's touch. He wanted her more than he had any woman. She set his heart tripping over itself, and the heat in him rose like a fever. But he knew they couldn't do this thing. As much as he desired her and she desired him, he couldn't take advantage of the situation and still ride out with her husband. If he allowed what was happening to go on, he'd have to leave the settlements the same way he had the last time, feeling shamed for his failures.
Anna.
He pulled away. She looked at him, her dark eyes full of uncertainty.
I thought this was what you wanted.
I do, but not like this. I don't think it's really what you want either. Tell me I'm wrong.
She folded her arms across her chest as if she were suddenly cold and turned away from him. She walked to the window and looked out at the metallic light.
You're right. I don't even know what I think anymore, John Henry. The world, my world, is a confused place for me.
He went to her, put his hands on her shoulders, but she wouldn't turn around and look at him.
You are like the coyote who shows his face when it is least expected and then is gone again in a whisper. I thought I was over you, that you were just a memory, like an old photograph that I would sometimes look at but not be roused to anger or pity or hatred. Or even love.
Cole kissed her hair.
I'm sorry for all the pain I've caused you. Youth is my only excuse for being so foolish all those years ago. I should have come back to tell you that I was leaving Indian Territory.
It doesn't matter now why you left then.
It does to me.
I would have gone with you had you come to get me.
I know.
Then if you knew that, why didn't you come?
Because it wasn't my right to take you away from your people, this land. I wasn't part of this place, and I knew your father would never allow it. Couldn't bring that disgrace on you.
Men are such fools. They always think that they know what women want, and they never do.
Are you speaking about me or Jimmy?
She turned quickly, fire in her eyes.
Both of you. All of you.
Do you love him, Anna?
I don't know. He has become so distant from me. This thing, this craziness that is in him, I don't understand it. It has been like living with a stranger for the past year.
Never any children?
She blinked.
No.
Cole thought that she was going to cry, but instead she went to the stove and kindled a fire under the coffee pot.
I'm sorry to hear it.
Why? Why should you be sorry for my marriage? Why should you be sorry that I have no children?
I just am. I think of how it could have been between us.
Please, let's not talk about it anymore. Why did you really come back?
See you again.
What about him? Will you help him?
Yes, I'll help him.
Something broke in her. Cole could hear the half-utterance of her emotions. He rolled a shuck and smoked it, leaning against the door jamb and staring out into the empty places of the land, toward the sky where a crow flew alone, winging its way across the sea of endless blue. Anna walked to the stove.
Took me a long time to stop thinking about you every day.
We break each other's hearts and wonder why.
I had nothing to offer you then. And even if you weren't married, I'd have nothing to offer you now.
She took a pair of cups down from the cupboard and set them on the rough table, then took the pot and filled them with steaming coffee.
You think that's what women want? A man who can offer them something?
Don't they?
She shook her head and sat before one of the cups and took it into her hands.
They want only one thing.
A man who will love them.
Yes, a man who will love them and never leave them.
Cole sat down opposite her.
You want to ride away with me now?
I'm not sure, John Henry. Honest to God.
She looked at him across the space of the table, but he could see in her eyes that if he were to say that he wanted her to come with him, that they'd ride away and never look back, the answer would have been no. Joe Digger stirred outside the cabin. Cole reached across the table and touched her hand with his.
I really am sorry for everything.
Me too.
She sipped her coffee and stared into his face.
I still love him in spite of everything, and I still don't want him to die out there. So I'm asking you to make sure that—
I'll do what I can. But the truth is, none of us may come back from this. You have to prepare yourself for the worst, Anna.
I want him to come back. And I want you to come back.
It's a lot of wanting.
I know it.
And if we do both come back, then what?
That's probably Jimmy returning.
Cole stepped outside and saw Joe Digger leaning over the back of his horse, watching him.
You enjoying yourself?
He looked at the cabin, then back down the road where Jimmy was riding into view.
Looks like the constable's coming back. I suspect an Indian can be a mighty cantankerous son of a bitch if he thinks his woman has got eyes for another man. Wouldn't you?
Mind your own business.
Sure, sure. It ain't none of my concern what people do, but let me tell you this, John Henry. I ain't rid all this way just for the Sunday pleasure of it. I came here to kill some men and take that white sumbitch back to New Mexico for the reward. That still your aim, or has it changed in the last couple of hours?
Cole walked over to where Digger stood. Jimmy Wildbird was a couple of hundred yards from reaching the house.
Nothing's changed for me. Keep your thoughts to yourself. And one more thing. We get on the heels of those renegades, you leave off with the drinking. You understand?
His gaze narrowed.
I guess we each got us a temptation we oughtn't to have. I'll keep off the liquor, and you keep your mind on the business at hand. Maybe that way we'll both come out of this alive.
Cole was tempted to send him packing, but he could see no way of doing it without a fight. Jimmy Wildbird rode up to the house. He had several sacks of supplies tied to his saddle horn. He dismounted, looked in the direction of the two men, and then went into the house without a word. Digger turned his attention to the curry comb in his hand.
Well, man comes home, probably hungry and wanting his supper. Maybe wanting something more than just his supper.
Cole turned and walked back toward the water tank, dipped his bandana in it, and tied it around his neck, cool and wet. His mind was feverish with anger and shame. Then he took the Winchester and walked off toward the copse of trees several hundred yards from the house. He thought he'd heard a wild turkey gobble, but mostly he just wanted to be alone, away from the cabin, and the thought that Jimmy was inside with Anna. Or maybe it was just knowing that what he had wanted to do with Anna had been wrong, and he didn't want to look into the man's eyes whilst they sat at the supper table. Cole stayed in the woods until the sun filtered low through the trees and threw long shadows.
Supper's on!
Cole stayed in the woods until the entire sky turned a deep velvet before he went back. There were lights on inside the cabin. When Cole walked in, Anna and Jimmy and Joe Digger were sitting around the table, their plates scraped clean, except for Anna's, which was barely touched. Jimmy looked up.
What happened? You get lost out in them woods?
Thought I was onto a turkey, but never got a shot at it.
Yeah. There's some wild turkeys around here sometimes. So far, I haven't been able to shoot one either.
Joe Digger poured whiskey into his tin cup and watched Cole with his hooded, brooding eyes. Cole ate little.
You two can sleep on the porch if you like. Looked like it might rain, and the roof over the porch is well repaired and won't leak on you.
Anna avoided Cole's glance as he carried his plate to the basin where she stood, drawing water into the sink from a pump. Cole lay on the porch for a long time after they'd tossed down their sugans and watched the lightning off in the distance and heard the soft rumble of thunder. His thoughts were of earlier in the day. None of it made him feel good about himself. And for the first time in a long while, he felt like he'd crossed lines and broken codes a man wasn't allowed to do. At least not a good man.
Pa's coming for you, Daddy. Take you out of that cold, dark grave you're lying in. Hold on, boy. Hold on. Maria, go to save Teddy.
The coming storm, a bird of prey, a drunken killer's nightmares. Anna inside with her husband. All of it put a coldness in Cole and reminded him that everyone was forever tied to his past, to the darkness and wandering ghosts and wounded spirits of his life. He felt the full weight of his own mortality bearing down on him so hard he could scarcely breathe. His own sleep didn't come until long after the yellow light within the house went out. As they passed a farmhouse with some pretty good-looking horses, Pablo noticed the horses and thought to himself that maybe such a horse was exactly what he needed. He waited until they had gone another mile or two. He couldn't be sure exactly, but he calculated it to be far enough.
You can let me off here.
Here?
Yes, my friend. This will be far enough for me.
George hauled back on the reins and the mule's ears pricked up and they stood shuddering in their traces.
You for certain, Mr. Juarez?
Yes.
Well, and I guess you know better than me where it is you want to get off at.
See.
George hunched his shoulders and set the brake and watched as the old man climbed down.
Well, good luck to you, Mr. Juarez.
Gracias, senor.
Maybe we'll meet up again. I'll be around these parts trading till I decide to go somewhere else. I guess so's after a while I like to see new places.
Perhaps, amigo. Who is to say what the future holds?
That's right.
George grinned and offered Pablo his hand, and the old man shook it with a firm grip. Pablo waited until the black man disappeared down the road before turning and heading back toward the farm. It would be a bold trick, and one that could easily get him shot if he were to fail at it, but he needed a horse. It took the better part of an hour to get there because of the old ache in his right hip and because he still hadn't fully regained all of his strength. Sweat trickled down his neck and over his ribs and soaked his shirt. The farm sat back off the road, down a lane where wagon tracks had scored the grass. He walked down that way toward the house. There were three other buildings besides the house, a chicken coop, a corn crib, and a tool shed. But what interested him most was the corral where the horses were standing, watching him, their ears up, their noses snuffling the air. One in particular caught his eye, a nice, tall clay bank with black stockings. He walked up to the house, pretending not to notice the horses. There seemed no one about, but he must make sure. He removed his sombrero and pulled the pistol, hiding it behind the hat. He knocked on the door and waited, standing, holding his hat and the pistol in his hands. In a few moments, he heard footsteps from inside, and then the door opened. A man with a napkin hanging from the front of his shirt stood there looking at him.
Yeah? What do you want?
I am sorry, senor, to have to trouble you, especially at the hour of your dinner, but I could use a drink of water.
The man looked at him, then looked beyond him to see if there was someone else with him. Then he looked back at him. He was a large man with a full head of hair the color of rust. He had a meaty face and a thick neck and round, heavy shoulders.
You lost? I don't know of any Mexicans around this part of the country. You must be lost.
You see, maybe a little, senor.
Well, I reckon you can go over and pump yourself up some water. But you get on down the road as soon as you finish getting a drink. You understand me?
Si, senor. I understand.
The man stood there, waiting for him to retreat. It had been a long time since Pablo had done this sort of thing. He had to give it a little thought to see exactly how he should do it. The man didn't look like he would just give him one of his horses if he asked. Something had to happen. He was thinking that maybe he should just pull the pistol out from behind the hat and take his chances that the man would not notice that there were no bullets in it. Then, just as he was thinking about it, he heard a woman's voice from inside.
Edwin, who is at the door?
The man turned part way to look back into the room.
Just some old damn Mexican begging a little water.
When he turned back around, Pablo had the big dragoon pistol aimed at his face.
What?
Please, senor. Not so loud. Your wife will hear and come see you like this. I only need a horse and a saddle. Not too much to ask in exchange for your life, eh?
Uh-uh.
The man shook his head.
Good. Tell her you are going to be outside for a little while, and that when you are finished, you will come back in and finish your dinner. Tell her that everything is all right.
Elsa, I'm going outside for a few minutes to take care of something.
Well, don't be too long. Your dinner will get cold.
The man stepped outside.
I am going to put my pistol back under my hat in case your woman looks out.
but I can get it back out again quick if I have to. You believe that I can do it?
Yep.
Good. Then let's go pick out a horse.
It was the Claybank mare that had caught Pablo's eye earlier.
I'll take the Claybank, senor. She looks like she can run pretty fast. I will need a saddle, too.
They're inside the shed. Take whichever one you want.
They stepped inside the shed.
That one will do.
That's my best saddle!
That is why I picked it. Would you please put it on that pretty mare for me?
The man picked up the saddle, and they walked back outside.
You sure must know horses. This one cost me $500.
Yes, I've always had a good eye for them.
The man finished saddling the horse and led her out of the corral.
Anything else you'd like to steal from me while you're here?
Consider the horse a loan, senor. What is your name?
Edwin Black.
Well, Senor Edwin Black, I will see that your horse is returned to you when I have finished my business.
Pablo could see the look of mistrust in the man's eyes.
Believe what you like, senor, but I am a man of honor and will return your horse if I am still alive to do it.
The man watched with growing dejection as Pablo climbed up in the saddle and took up the reins. Pablo made the mare sidestep first this way, then that. It was a well-behaved horse.
Now, one more thing I need from you, senor.
What?
Do you have a rifle?
Well, what if I said I didn't?
I would not believe you.
No, I didn't think so.
Call to your woman and tell her to bring it.
Elsa, can you bring me my rifle?
She appeared in the door.
Is there something wrong?
No, just bring my rifle.
She looked at Pablo, then at her husband. Then she turned and went back inside the house and returned in a few moments, carrying the rifle. It was a heavy brass-fitted Winchester repeater. The man started to take it from her.
Here, let me see it.
What's going on here, Edwin?
Just that this man is stealing my best horse and saddle and now my rifle, that's all.
What?
Just be quiet, okay?
I will also need some bullets for it.
The woman looked at her husband.
Go and get him a box of shells.
This time she didn't argue. When she returned, Pablo took some of the shells and loaded them into the rifle, and the rest he put in his coat pocket. Things were looking better now that he had a horse and a gun with bullets. Pablo took out the old walker and tossed it to the man.
Here, you can have this. I doubt I would ever be able to find any bullets to fit it.
The man took the walker and looked at it, then held it down along his leg, knowing it was of no use to him.
I will see that your horse gets returned to you as soon as I am finished with my business, and your saddle as well.
What about the rifle?
If I can, that's yet to be seen.
Pablo walked the horse back up the trace that led to the road.
Are you going to go after him and get back your horse and saddle and gun?
No, I'm going to go eat the rest of my dinner.
Then you're just going to let him steal from us?
He's got the rifle, not me. You want me to get shot by my own rifle?
He's just an old man.
Maybe he is, but he looks like a man who's done this kind of thing before. He tricked me with an old pistol that didn't even have any bullets in it. That took some nerve. I could have shot him dead if I'd known. Son of a bitch has some nerve.
Pablo smiled at the words and touched heels to the mare and put her into a nice trot. Memories of the old days racing through his mind, his blood afire. It was still raining when John Henry Cole shook loose of his bedroll the following morning, and the smell of coffee coming from inside the cabin had a warming effect. But instead of going there, he went and saddled his horse and helped Digger reload the pack animal.
A gruesome day to set out after killers.
Cole didn't reply. He worked efficiently, tying double knots and making sure the load was distributed evenly. They'd both been smart enough to carry slickers with them, but even wearing them, the rain spilled off the brims of their hats down their necks, and it didn't take long for their boots to end up soaked. Cole heard the cabin door open and saw Jimmy Wildbird come out, wearing a slicker as well and carrying a long gun. Anna stood in the doorway, and Cole couldn't be sure, but he thought through the veil of rain that she tossed a glance in his direction. He had a hell of a feeling about everything, and he knew it was only going to get worse if he didn't get the chance to talk to her again before they left. But he couldn't see any way of that happening. Jimmy Wildbird came out to the corral and saddled his horse and packed the stocky little dun with supplies.
There's hot coffee inside if you want.
He didn't make a formality out of it.
Sure. Gonna visit the privy first.
Cole took the opportunity to get a moment alone with Anna. He poured himself a cup, and her presence in the room made it hard for him to get his words in line.
Have you thought more about what I said yesterday?
That's all I did last night was think about it.
And?
She shook her head.
I can't give you an answer. Not yet, anyway. I talked with Jimmy last night. I told him I was unhappy. I'm not sure he understands.
He understands.
How can you be sure?
I saw the look in his eyes when he came out to the corral.
He wouldn't talk to me about it. Now there's no time.
They stood in the growing light, seeming to hold their breaths.
I feel ashamed for what happened yesterday.
I do too. But I have to tell you something.
What?
If I had it to do over again, I'm not sure I wouldn't do the same thing.
John Henry, I have to...
I love you, Anna.
Cole saw Digger coming toward the house.
You think about that while I'm gone.
Cole could see it in her eyes that there was something tearing at her heart. But then they heard Digger's boots on the porch, and she turned her back to Cole, leaving whatever was on her mind unsaid. Digger's silence as he drank his coffee was unnerving. He knew what Cole was thinking, and Cole didn't like it. Cole didn't like anything about the situation. Something had begun that couldn't be finished, and he hated to leave unfinished business. Then Jimmy came back into the cabin, and the three of them sat there drinking coffee, and Anna served them hoe cakes and blackstrap molasses, and never sat down with them, choosing instead to keep herself busy at the stove, her back turned to them.
You all about ready to get on the trail?
Ready when you are, officer. I ain't getting any richer sitting around here eating hotcakes.
The Indian looked at him.
Then let's get at it.
They stood and filed out the door, except for Jimmy.
I'll catch up with you in a minute.
Cole and Digger set their horses and waited for him. When he came out of the house, he wore a scowl and didn't say anything, but simply mounted up and rode out. They followed, Cole last in line. Cole tossed a look back over his shoulder and saw Anna standing in the doorway, watching them. The rain falling in a gray line. And then she stepped back into the shadows and was gone. It had stopped raining by the time they rode into Shelby Flats, a sleepy little village that seemed to be big on weeds and not much else.
The last killing took place near here. An Osage policeman and his wife. There's a man living here who can tell us more.
Faces appeared in doorways at their arrival, mostly Indians dressed in calico shirts and brogan shoes and carrying rifles.
The man we have to see is named Ray Doolittle. He's about half Apache and half something else.
Apache? I thought all the Apaches were over in New Mexico and Arizona.
Ray ain't. He was a light horse once. Then he got shot in the knee and lost his leg.
Where'd we find Doolittle?
Jimmy pointed to a knoll a quarter mile beyond the village proper.
He has a place just over there.
Ray Doolittle was in his yard when they rode up.
I seen you coming up. Up here, I can see most everything that goes on.
He had a crutch propped under his arm. A high back wheelchair sat nearby.
Ray, we've come looking for those Creeks. This is John Henry Cole and Joe Digger.
Ray Doolittle leaned on the crutch and didn't bother to offer to shake hands. There was still some evidence of a strong, muscled body in his shoulders and arms, but he had a paunch over his belt and lacked the fine cheekbones of most Apaches. His face was as round as a fry pan.
Digger, I've heard of you.
Well, I ain't surprised. I've caught many a fish out of this territory.
Then Ray turned his attention to Cole.
Heard of you, too. Deputy under Judge Parker, wasn't you?
Cole didn't tell him he wasn't a federal man any longer, or his real reason for being there now.
What can you tell us about the killing?
Step down and I'll tell you what I know.
The day was turning sultry as they dismounted. Ray Doolittle eased himself into the wheelchair and held the crutch across his lap.
It was late. Sun was almost set when they came riding in. I seen them from that window over there. I was sick in bed that day. I get sick sometimes with a fever. Comes and goes ever since I got my leg taken off. Anyway, I watched them, five of them, riding slow, like they wasn't in no hurry, like they was just looking around at things, getting a lay of where everything was. The light was getting weak, but I could tell that one of them was a white man. You can always tell a white man by the way they'll ride a horse, different than an Indian. Them others was Indians. They just rode on through, and I was glad they did. Glad until I seen where they were headed, out to Cecil Tallhorse's place.
The policeman?
Uh-huh. He's an Osage, but a good Osage. At least he was. Quiet man, done his job. He was married to a Cherokee, real tall woman. Tallest woman most of us ever seen. Cecil and her were an item around here for a time when he first brought her here. But she was all right. Done good by everybody. Got so nobody seemed to notice she was such a tall woman after a while. I watched them ride out there, and I thought to myself, what those boys want with Cecil? If it wasn't for the fever, I'd have gotten out of bed and gone out there myself, because it didn't feel right to me. Them boys riding out to Cecil so close to evening like that. Hitching up the buggy ain't no easy chore for me, but I'd have done it if it hadn't been for the fever that night. I watched and watched until it got too dark to see. Cecil lives just beyond that little rise. Can you see it?
They turned and looked.
Anyway, I must have fallen off to sleep a time or two because of the fever. But then, sometime late, real late, I seen it, the fire. I knew it was Cecil's burning up. And I know it had something to do with them boys. Wasn't nothing I could do. I kept hoping somebody'd see it besides me, but nobody did. The next morning I crawled out of bed and hitched up the buggy. Took me 2 hours, but I did it. I went and got somebody. By the time we got out there, there was nothing left. We found Cecil and Lou burned up. Oh, it was an awful thing to have to see.
Which way did those boys go after the fire?
I looked around for their tracks. They rode west, due west. Looked to me like they was heading straight into no man's land.
Well, that makes sense. They'd have to know that even if someone was foolish enough to follow them, it wasn't likely they'd be followed into that country.
Nobody that's got any sense would go after them boys in no man's land. I've been there.
Then his eyes lowered to the missing leg.
Left a leg there.
What's between here and there?
Nothing, deputy. Nothing but snakes, bad water, and outlaws.
That means sooner or later they'll be coming back into the settlements.
How do you know?
They'll get bored sitting around doing nothing. They want to make some more bad medicine. They won't follow Caddo Pierce for long if he doesn't keep them happy. Keep them murdering, raping, and stealing.
Jimmy's right. Renegade Indian boys won't follow anybody long if they get bored. Especially they won't follow a white man.
I wish to hell I could go with you.
I wish you could too, Ray. Thanks for the information.
You're welcome to stay for supper.
It was just past noon.
We have to go.
They burned Cecil and his wife up in their house. They probably did some terrible things to him before they burned him up. Lou was a handsome woman with all that long hair.
Jimmy nodded, then they mounted and turned their horses toward the west road.
I feel sorry for him. Just as soon be dead as to be crippled up like that.
I'd put a bullet in my brain was I to lose a leg. Man without his legs ain't much.
The three of them rode on in silence, each man with a different thought on his mind.